It's Hawaii Public Radio, All Things Considered, and I'm Dave Lawrence. Thank you for joining us. A legendary performer making a debut, a career that has had so much, and now a first, the Blue Note Hawaii. Tonight through Sunday, 8 p.m. shows, musician, actress, UN Global Ambassador for the Food and Agriculture Organization, author, multiple Grammy Award winner, sold over 100 million albums, collaborated with a massive list of icons. We'll touch on just some of them because we don't have enough time with the great Dionne Warwick, who we welcome right now. How are you? And thank you so much for doing this.
I'm wonderful. Thank you. And thank you for inviting me to do this.
You are very welcome. You were here for a benefit. Your son, Damon Elliott, lives here. Have you been back since?
No, I haven't. I've been on the road myself.
And does he live in the Honolulu area?
Yes, he does.
Wow.
In Waikiki.
In Waikiki, of all places. That's great. And on that note of family, Dionne, you came from a very musical one. Drinkard Sisters, your mom, aunts, and uncles, gospel music group, grew up in a gospel singing family, grandfather, a minister, had your own gospel group, the Gospel Heirs. And yet another band that performed with, among others, Elvis Presley.
The Sweet Inspirations were the group that backed Elvis. And, of course, they were comprised of partially my family as well. My aunt Sissy Houston and my cousin Myrna Chimwell.
I've heard you talk about Elvis several times in your life. When did you first get to be around him?
When I went to visit with the Sweet Inspirations and he was performing in Vegas at the same time that I was.
Is that when he came and put his photos inside your albums or something like that?
He sure did. It was the most amazing thing that ever could have happened to me. I don't think I've ever sold that many CDs or albums in Vegas since.
Tell that story for people listening.
I was performing at the Sands Hotel, and he was performing at the what was then called the International Hotel. And he was opening. And I went over to his sound check and rehearsal because I wanted to see my Aunt Sissy. We sat and talked for a few minutes, and he asked me what I was doing, and I told him I was opening at the Sands Hotel. And he said how much he loved my voice, and he says that I'm going to do something very special for you. I said, okay. And I had no idea what he was talking about. But as it turned out, every album that was in every record store in Las Vegas, he provided an 8x10 signed autographed photograph of himself and had it inserted into my albums. It was amazing.
Talk about keeping your word and doing something remarkably unusual for a performer, huh? I mean, who does something like
yeah.
that?
Yeah. It was the most, like I said, the most exciting and amazing thing that's ever happened to me.
Right. I bet. I mean, just hearing it is like hard to believe. And we didn't mention it. I have not actually heard you talk about this. Your father credited with being a record promoter among many occupations. Did that factor into your development as well?
Not really. Daddy was he promoted gospel music.
Mm.
My mother and my father both. They a very, very important part of the beginning of my career when I was touring. My mother went on tour with me for the first, oh my goodness, 4 or 5 years that I was on the road, and she got tired of the road. My dad then decided, well, okay, I'm not going to leave you out there by yourself. So he decided to come on the road with me, and he was out with me for like a good 4 or 5 years himself. I think they felt that kind of security was supposed to happen for me.
Well, you just hit the nail on the head, security, and it allows you to develop as a much more confident person because you don't have to worry about some of those other things because you've got trusted people real close to you that are embracing what you're doing. And just to be clear, this is happening when you're a young adult too, right? Like after 18, they're still with you, shepherding you.
Yes.
And yeah, that's critical. And another critical thing, legendary songwriter, performer, Burt Bacharach, who would partner with you along with partner Hal David. When did they come into your life?
Actually, I met him on the session of the Drifters.
The Drifters.
He had written a song with another songwriter and partner, Bob Hilliard. The song was called Mexican Divorce.
Right.
And after the session was over, he approached me and asked if I'd be interested in doing demonstration records as long as he'd be writing with a new songwriting partner, Hal David. I don't know why he approached me, because everybody in the group certainly could sing. And I guess it was because I read music and I kind of was the one who put all the backgrounds together.
He wanted to use you as sort of a vehicle to demo different songs they were coming up with. Do I have it right?
You certainly did.
Wow, that's an interesting kind of role, huh? You don't always get, you don't hear that kind of story from, like, not every musician, I guess is what I'm saying, gets the chance to do something like that.
It was a very, very special relationship between he and Hal and myself. As a matter of fact, we were finally known in the industry as the triangle marriage that worked. Which became very, very funny to us. But it was a case of we each felt we had something to bring to the table and depended upon each other to do that.
Hearing you talk about some of these special ways that you've been able to share your talent with other people, and people have been inspired by you and nurtured by you, the way that you've described you've been nurtured, well, you've kind of had that role with others too. And one of them, I would imagine, Michael Jackson as a person you felt that way toward.
Michael, I met him when he was 9 years old, as I did with Stevie Wonder. Stevie was 11 when I first met him. So they were babies, and I treated them as my babies.
How'd you first meet Michael? Explain how that happened. He's 9 years old. Paint the picture.
Michael was, of course, with the Jackson 5, and they were brought into Los Angeles to perform for Berry Gordy to get a contract with Motown Records. And I was invited to sit in on the audition. That's when I met this little feisty thing. He decided that he was going to be Michael Jackson. And I had a seat at a table. All the boys were sitting at a table next to us. And I got up to go get a drink, and I came back, and he was sitting in my seat. And I asked him, I said, hello, I think you're sitting in my seat. He said, I don't think so. I said, yeah, I think you are. He said, well, I'm Michael Jackson. I said, yeah, no, I'm Dionne Warwick. He said, oh, I know who you are. I said, you do? I don't know who you are yet. Am I supposed to know you? He said, oh, yeah, you're going to know me. I said, okay, I'm going to wait and see how long it's going to take for me to get to know you. And that was the beginning of our relationship.
Oh, my gosh. And he's 9 saying that?
Yeah, he was 9 years old. He's a feisty little thing. He was adorable.
Well, now I see why you would call him a feisty little thing, because that or a confidence-filled little thing. I'm not sure which.
And that, too.
And you mentioned it. Stevie Wonder, how also did you first stroll into that kind of relationship at his young age?
I mean, Stevie, we were doing a show in Paris, as a matter of fact, at the Olympia Theater. Was accompanied by his mother, which was wonderful. And Stevie just clung to me. He just thought I was somebody that he could relate to and he could talk to. And he hung out in my dressing room with me. And, you know, I would take him out for lunch and we would play games. He was a little boy. He was a wonderful kid. And from that day to this, he still treats me like he's an 11-year-old.
That's incredible. Well, it's remarkable getting to talk to you. I have a ton of other questions I could hit you with, but I'll leave those for another time when we get to talk again, hopefully in the future, and leave you with this. I have the details of your Hawaii debut I got from Steve, the mystery emailer. It was August 21st and 22nd, 1970. Dionne Warwick, making her Hawaii debut, he writes, performed 2 sold-out shows at the Blaisdell Arena, and it says here, interesting story. Promoter Tom Moffitt said before her performance on opening night, Dionne politely asked if he could get her a hot dog and a Pepsi Cola from the concession stand. And it says here that he gladly agreed and that the 50 cents he spent that night on Dionne was the beginning of backstage catering that in later years would cost as much as 10 grand. I thought that was...
And that's a true story. It's true. I love hot dogs and I am a definite Pepsi girl.
I love it. We'll leave it there. It's Dionne Warwick. I hope you had fun today.
I sure did. And thank you so much for making me laugh a little. It's so nice to be easy and at ease.
Oh, appreciate it.
And thank you so very much for inviting me to be a part of this.
You're welcome. And be safe.
I will. Thank you.
Aloha.
Bye. Aloha. It's Dionne Warwick. And you could not be in a better place. You're listening to my friend, Dave Lawrence.
Thought I'd feel this way, and as far as I'm concerned, sweet smile.